let's welcome all of you. You are most welcome. This is the Portfolio Committee on Environmental Affairs. Just for housekeeping matters, I think there are some who are here who might not know who's who here. So we'll introduce ourselves. After that, we'll then hand over to the minister to introduce her team. I'm Jasmine Mthembu, the member of parliament and the chair of this committee, Portfolio Committee on Environmental Affairs. We have Ms. Matubela here, who's the secretary of the committee. I will then request if members please can introduce themselves. Thank you very much.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Sarah Sander, member of the Portfolio Committee. Good morning. I'm Joni Sientam, also a member.
Ozola Nhape, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning.
Hela Kikana, member of the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Minister. Colleague, my name is Patrick Mandilo. I'm a member of the committee from the African National Congress.
Okay. So thank you very much. We now know who from the side of the committee who the members are. If there are other members who will join us, I think we've got two or three that might join us. We will also request them to introduce themselves. But for now, can we then hand over to the department minister? Most welcome. We hand over to you now to introduce your team.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm going to introduce you just two members of the team who will then do introduction of the others. We have a person who you know very well here, just next to me on my left hand side, who is the Director General of the Department. The AD, Celia, who is here with us, the acting CEO, the chairperson of Isimangaliso, which is actually, as you all know, a World Heritage Site. Dr. Mavisho Mishiman is here with us as well. Who else is here?
I'm beginning to hear the title stop.
You can just adopt it and then later on we'll find out. Thank you very much. He is not doctor, by the way, but I thought he is a Mavisho Mishiman. He is a former director general of the Department of Home Affairs, as well as the CEO of CITA, S-I-T-A, as well as the CEO, a former CEO of CELTA. I think the first.
Yes.
Yeah, the very first. After the transformation. Thank you. Oh, yes, Kerry. Acting CEO of Isimangaliso. We'll just lift it. Yeah, thank you. We're not in Hollywood, she's acting because of some reason, you know. Thank you.
Okay. Did we see the acting CEO of this Isimangaliso? Oh, now we see her. Did you? Are the people that wanted to introduce this minister as well?
Yes, all the chair members. I don't know whether it's easier for me to allow colleagues to just press the button, otherwise I can just say Gigi Zinkekeni from the department, acting DDG is Kumsha Manoza, Mr. Herbert Mthembu from Isimangaliso is the COO, and then in Sandhax the acting CEO, and then the acting CFO, Death Story, and Dr. is a real doctor, not a fellow from Yerwa, Dr. Howard Hendricks, and support their team, and all of them have helped. And I think the centers could, and the DIA team and the ministries that have not introduced, have been here with the community to support the attention on this.
Thank you very much, colleagues. As you would know, we have interacted with the department in the as we started the business of Parliament after the elections. But what we didn't do was to get to know and understand, as we know, the mandates of the various entities within the department. We had not at the time interacted with the department, with the entities. That's why we felt that before we get into what we are expected to do on matters of oversight, holding you accountable because we give you money, which is money of our people, at least we must have a sense of what you do. So this interaction is about that. On the side of Senpas, on the side of Ismailiso, to know what you do and to have an understanding and appreciation of what you do in the main. If you want to flag other things that you think we must be aware of, indeed it is up to you. The honor is on you to do so. But the main objective of this gathering is for us to know what you do, because we will be with you for the next 5 years. And we will be holding you accountable. We know that you might be coming to see us around October on other matters, together with the department, on other matters that relate to the Auditor General's auditing processes and what he found out. So we will not zoom into those, because there will be an opportunity for us to do so in October, not only for yourselves, but the entirety of the department and all entities that are within or that report to the Department of Environmental Affairs. So in the main, that's what we are here for, to hear what you do and how we need to add value to the work that is being done by our government. The other issue, of course, that we should is also quite wonderful that we are meeting with Sampas after we have been through very laborious public hearings in three provinces, KZN, Mpumalanga, and Northwest this past week. Where we in the main were talking about rhino poaching. Of course, we have loaded in the public hearings the question of climate change and sustainable development goals. But the discussions in all these public hearings were mainly centered around rhino poaching from our people. That's what they concentrated on. So it's right that we are meeting you after we have taken those rounds. But of course, Parliament also expects us to go and do some oversight activity. That's why in our programs, we have always wanted to come and see where you live and how you live and whether you are fulfilling your mandate where you are. So we had made arrangements that come this next Friday, I think 25-26, we will, in fact, it will also be a wonderful exercise to go and see the Kruger National Park after we have gone through these hearings, so that whatever report we produce is a report that wherein we are conscious of the environment. That we are talking about. We are not talking about this poaching, and we have not seen the area, we have not even seen a rhino, except on television, a rhino that is being poached or killed. Some of us saw something on Caterpillar this past week. So at least we have a sense of runners that are being killed and pulled. But we would like to see them because it's our work. To see any signs of poaching, any signs of killing, but also satisfy ourselves that indeed we are doing our best to protect and save our rhinos and other species in our Kruger National Park. So indeed, that's what we'll be doing. We'll be visiting you. We hope that correspondence in this regard has been sent to you. So, roughly then, colleagues, that's where we are, Honorable Minister. We are not here on some oversight activity. We are here to get to know. This is a get-to-know meeting. Get to know you better, that's what other people say when they ask other people to see them in bars and the restaurants. But we are seeing you in the corridors of Parliament. We, without any further ado, we are starting with Sunparks. The next presentation will be Isimangaliso. So if Sunparks is ready, we'll then hand over to the Minister who might start this presentation before we get deeper into the presentation. Minister.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just before we get to the presentation, for purpose of record of what we discussed last time, that's in relation to the hearings, there was also a suggestion from our side that there's probably a need to also do a visit in Limpopo as one of the hardest hit provinces. And I thought that we should also flag this so that at this level of portfolio committee level, you could then have a discussion on that specificity. If it is so, then I think we can raise it at some stage when we begin discussions, or maybe after this presentation, so it depends really on you. Just a quick introduction, we have a board of Sunparks, and as I fully say, that this is a yes-no meeting. It would be quite helpful if we give as much information as we can, and rightfully so, as you say, also the information that we're giving would also be assisted greatly by the visits that we have discussed and agreed upon. Probably just to visit the Kruger National Park itself, particularly regarding related to the poaching activities, just to see for yourselves, just to look at the situation and also perhaps possibly come up with some support measures or any suggestions on what could be done. It would be quite ideal to also know other parts of national, because I think colleagues who are from provinces by now would be knowing the provincial parts, and nothing bars us also to just look at those. But you know the national parts. I did receive a question recently when I was about 4.5 years in the UN, asking how many parks have I been able to visit, national parks. I was fortunate in that there were quite many, there are just a few left. And I think by December they should have been completing those that are remaining. So at the end of your 5 years, you should be able to answer the question saying as well, in the same manner. How that is going to happen, I think it should be possible to do. Sunparks is a good entity that we are very proud of. Has been quite stable over a long time, and I'm sure it will speak to the issues then about how it's being managed. We appoint the board as government through Tenet, and we have appointed that board, which term is just about, I think, to expire next year, upon which time we'll be starting. Not to other time, end of this year, I think we'll be starting with the processes of appointing a new board. It's headed by the people whose names I think will be referred to later on in the presentation. And it's really been set up to particularly and more precisely to deal with issues of conservation, and I know the mandate is clear here, I'm not going to attempt to speak to it. But more importantly, something that doesn't quite come out clearly in the presentation, which we may need to discuss, is the capacity to create jobs in the park, which is one of our major mandates as a government. I think we can touch on that. At any given time, the park fund has itself employ more than 10,000 people who go wake up every day to go to job in the past. And from our point of view, these are the parks that are actually created in the middle of nowhere, where there may not have been any economic activity if it wasn't because of these parks. For us, this is actually, we view these as economic parks in the rural setting, and therefore they are, to an extent, not only meant for conservation, but more importantly for economic activity that's taking place in the middle of rural areas where development is taking place. I just speak about the job creation, I just speak about the conservation mandate, the importance of healing our people as well, as you see in the presentation where outcomes that we actually link with. So these are really men and women who are just having to make this presentation. I think I shouldn't take much of the time to just allow, I think it would be Dr. Zubia. You are not Dr. Zubia yet. Just about to become. Not yet. ABCD has to make a presentation. But as he does, I say we have just recently had a come to an end of the contract of the substantial CEO, which was last year. No, early this year, actually. And that CEO, by the way, had 32 terms, 2 5-year terms. We were of the view that because he was almost getting, how many years old, left with a few years to go into his retirement age. And because there wasn't quite a fast rule, hadn't fast rule in the law that said he should serve 2 terms, or CEO should serve 2 terms, we were going to be extending the period to about with another 3 years or so, just to get it. It was really about the age, nothing linked to that, but as well as us getting ourselves ready into appointing a new CEO. So as we were discussing that matter, it emerged that the cabinet was not going to be agreeing with having extending the term of office, for all the reasons that we need to build and just ensure that we get articles as well. So the mandate was then terminated, but of course there were issues that I think we'll discuss later as well. Then we currently don't have CFO full-time. There has been interviews. Appointment is just about to be made. So those are the two agencies that are on top, except the other manager who's on suspension, only one. And that's had some appointment. So we are having two acting and one suspension. Case would also be had, as you know, we can't feel that close until the case is actually had. So just for that, I should mention that up front, otherwise we have a full team and a full mandate. Thank you.
Before we hand over to the acting CEO, let's just acknowledge the apology of the deputy minister, who is ill. Would have loved to be with us here, but that's too late. It has to record that. Yeah. Oh, she's still in hospital. Oh, okay. Then let us also wish her well, because we understand that she has been in hospital, just came out recently. Let's wish her well. To be Dr. Avis Beer, to be... The platform is yours, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, members, and Minister for the introduction. I will keep the presentation quite brief in the hope that members would have time to read through the detail, but also the visit is going to be worth your while in Kruger, where we can deal with more detailed issues. Given the time that we have, we chose to hit at the most important issues that relate to our mandate. First being the reference to the Constitution of the Republic, where we derive the broader environmental mandate, as well as conservation. But also of significance is the fact that that mandate also goes with what is known as sustainable development and the use of natural resources while promoting justifiable economic and social development. And we're saying this deliberately because we come from a paradigm where we have always believed that national parks are sacrosanct and that they should be left untouched and that there should be no entitlement for any benefits coming out of national parks. And so the playing field has now been leveled. As much as we give respect to national parks as sacrosanct, we also have to make sure that they do end their right of existence. The second leg of our mandate also comes from the legislative framework, which is the National Environmental Management Act of 1998, but also subsequent to that act, we have the one specific to protected areas, which includes national parks, which are our mega area of focus. But we also have the National Environmental Management Biodiversity Act, which then deals with other more regulatory issues that are handled by both the department and other institutions. Also within that regulatory framework, we have international conventions to which our country is signatory. The list is quite straightforward. These are the main ones that have an impact on the work that we do on a day-to-day basis. And then, of course, the next slide, slide number 6, really brings down everything to what our real mandate is in brief come out of all those frameworks, and that is to conserve, protect, control, and manage national parks and other defined protected areas and their biological diversity. This is done in various forms. We protect different species of plants, animals, but we also protect ecosystems, which involves broader systems which have an impact on the rest of our lives. Section 17 and 20 of the same Act also refers to sustainable development, thereby putting emphasis on the fact that sustainable development has to happen in those parts. And that speaks to what Minister has referred to in terms of our obligation to create jobs, our obligation to make sure that we contribute to the economic development of those areas where the parks are found. But also notably, being a public entity, Schedule 3A, we also subject to the Public Finance Management Act. And then as it relates to the National Development Plan, we fall under Outcome 10, which is the environmental assets and natural resources that are well protected and continually enhanced. But if one looks at the rest of the outcomes here, one will realize that there are a number of certain outcomes that we do have an impact on, like outcome 2, which is a long and healthy life for all South Africans. We play a very critical role in ensuring that happens through visitation to pass. We also have an impact on outcome 4, 5, 7, and 14. Pass play a very critical role in nation building and social cohesion. It's one of those few heritage assets that we commonly share as citizens of the country. Given that background, we then developed a vision, which is very, very unique. In fact, this came about just 2 years ago when we had a relook at what our relevance is going to be going forward. And we then developed this vision of a centre that continues to connect to society. In other words, a campus that is conscious of its environment, of the people surrounding it, a campus that plans in an integrated manner depending on where it finds itself, a center that takes into account the needs of people that surround national parks or are affected by national parks. We also have an exciting mission that refers to applying best practice, environmental justice, also refers to benefit sharing and sustainable use, which really indicates the chair for the change. We really are now focused more towards people. In addition to this, there is also a transformation mission which we would like to carry through in terms of our own work throughout. In order to carry through this vision, we have the structure that we have basically summarized. This is the high-level structure in terms of how we organize ourselves, obviously falling under the Ministry of Environmental Affairs. The Minister has already referred to the CEPAPS board, which then reports to the Ministry. And then under the board, you then have a CEO, but below the CEO, we have divided our work mainly from an operations perspective. We've got a total of 19 parks. Of course, other people talk about 21 parks, and that's simply because of the consolidation that has happened as far as the Garden Route National Park is concerned, which has then brought down the number to 19. But overall, 19 including, overall 21, sorry, including the Kruger National Park. Because of the size and scope of work involved in Kruger, we have separated the Kruger National Park to be one business unit as it relates to the rest of the other parks. So they can stay on that slide, please. And then, of course, we have the basic support functions that we support you have. CFO, human resources, etc. But then also importantly are our core functions. And I'll talk to this a little later. We identify those as mainly conservation services and tourism development and marketing. Those being, you know, our real core functions where we spend most of our time and energy. Next slide, please. And this is how our business architecture looks like, and clearly you'll see those three main elements of our focus being primarily underpinned by conservation at the bottom, as well as followed by tourism. And tourism is really a strategy that we use to sustain conservation. It's not necessarily being in the business of tourism for the sake of being in that business, but to make sure that we can support our conservation function and, of course, have a positive impact on the constituencies around the park. And constituency building is a specific focus point that also forms part of our business approach. Thanks. Next slide, please. And out of the flows these key strategic focus areas, five in total, we have tried to minimize them as best as we could. The first being to grow revenue. And by the way, they are by no means in any order of importance. We just put them as we thought them out. First being grow revenue, it's important that we grow our revenue to make sure that our business becomes financially sustainable. Throughout the world today, countries are struggling to fund conservation because it's not often the priority as we would like it to be. It's often last on the wish list because people must be fed first and other basic needs must be fulfilled. So conservation needs, we believe, to generate as much revenue as is possible in order to then sustain its continued existence. And then, of course, there is the element of facilitating socio-economic development. This speaks to our vision, Chair, of connecting to society. We decided we're going to have this objective so that we can pay particular attention to the issues that Minister has raised previously. The third one is then the effective management of national parks. Of course, in order for them to be sustainable, we need to make sure they are managed in accordance with best practice. And then the next one is integrating strategy implementation. This really means operational efficiencies, but also alignment with the broader government and objectives and programs, and making sure that we work in tandem with all other state departments. And then lastly, of course, is effective human capacity. We have to continue to build a learning organization that has got sufficient capacity to carry through this mandate. Even the long-term existence of the organization, we believe that we need to continue to make sure that we retain that capacity so that we are competitive going forward. Next slide, please. And just by way of a little bit of background in terms of the national park system, we have about 550 terrestrial and 48 coastal protected areas throughout. So this means we count basically everything in total. And these exceed 7.9 million hectares in size, which is 7.5% of the size of our country. We know the IUCN target of 10% of the surface area of each country. Now, nearly 4 million hectares of the 7.9, which is just over 50% of the protected areas, are national parks, which means that a significant amount of our protected areas are national parks. And our role then as centers is to make sure that we manage that 50%. The rest of the map there just indicates where the parks are throughout the country. You'll note that unfortunately in three provinces we do not have a presence, but we are sufficiently represented in the rest of the main other provinces. Next slide, please. And this
if I may, Chair, may I also indicate that these hectares that that Mr. Bia was speaking to also contributes greatly to our international obligations, which is to have 70% of terrestrial land under conservation. So we're working towards that obligation. We are now at what, I think 13%? Almost 12. So,
and then so the next slide talks to how effectively we manage these national parks. The department has fortunately set out certain criteria that are used nationally to ensure that at least there are minimum standards according to which protected areas are managed. And recently an assessment was done on the national parks. Whilst we had set a target of 67% in terms of effectiveness, we have to report that on average we have achieved an 80% effectiveness rate, which means that one has got the reasonable assurance that the national parks are being managed effectively and for the purposes for which they were established. Next slide, please. Of course, then coming to the second pillar of our business, we thought we would just share these statistics just to give you insight into our whole tourism plan. In total, we have a bed capacity of some 17,500, which means on any given night we can
have...
I'm sorry about that. I think the second element of our business being the tourism, just to give quick insights, we have a bed capacity of some 17,500 on any given day, which means that we can accommodate 17,500 people on the facilities that we run as centers. Our statistics show that we currently host per annum just over 5 million people, which is 10% of our population in the country. But of these, 73.8% are South Africans, which indicates clearly that we depend on domestic tourism. Whatever we do, our domestic market is crucial for us, for our existence going forward. The whole notion about international tourism could be misplaced. I mean, they account for just under 25% of the visitation into our parks. Black South African visitors, it is a bit of a struggle. There's under 500,000, which is less than 10% of the South African population. Hence the SANParks Week initiatives that we deal with in order to make people more familiar with national parks. Of course, the satisfaction index is only an internal reflection of how our customers view us. We score quite well there, 80%. Basically, the bottom part of the slide indicates our key markets from abroad. Leading the pack is Germany, followed by the UK and so on. But that only accounts for just the 24.8% that we have spoken about. Another interesting trend is that people visit parks as day visitors most often than they overnight in parks, and that's for obvious reasons. 70.7% are day visitors, and only 29.3% are overnight visitors, which points out to the fact of affordability once again, which we need to look into. Next slide, please.
Can I just say something on the slide, just on record? The linkage with the tourism here, activities within tourism and as a department, and the tourism market sector, just to be such as South African tourism, is very important, because you realize that, one, they have been recently, just as recent as now, a few years ago, a heightened activity on promotion of local tourism, because it has not been quite an issue of its interest in South Africa that you had between, I mean, Manchester, other part of our community, the black community. Part of our community has not quite been touring its own country in the past. So an increase has started just now, and great efforts are being done by the Department of Tourism as well. Linked to that is the issue about why you see Germany, United Kingdom. That's where we have a very great presence, high presence of our tourism marketing aspects, because we're not all over throughout the world in terms of offices, although currently there is a different approach by DERCO to not put every function of government like tourism and people who are promoting promotion of tourism in every country, but rather to promote our national interest and economic activities, they call it economic interest, in all, and that should be done by all, including the ambassadors themselves, instead of putting there. So the Germany effort has been quite United Kingdom. U.S. has recently not had any you know, war bodies that have filled that office. But others you'll see that are not necessarily here on the screen as well, there would have been that increase as well. The African continent as well.
Thanks, Minister. Next slide, please. This slide should just indicate Our performance has in relation to the rest of industry. The rest of industry overall occupancies are around 58%. And Sandpark stands at 70.9% occupancies, which is quite high, which means we're doing really well. In terms of revenue, we have grown just this last year by 14.5% to almost a billion rand, just revenue coming from tourism. And you can clearly see that every day in terms of the graph, there is consistent growth. You will see certain funny tendencies around March, April. Those need not be much of a concern because it's all about when the Easter holidays take place and so on. If the Easter holidays take place in March, performance in March will be better, and as such, performance in April will be a lot worse as compared to other years. So that really depends on the distribution of the holidays. Next slide, please. Just a little bit of insight into the product development activities that we've had. Recently, we've just reopened the Skukuza Airport, which had been closed for quite a long time as a result of the opening of the Kruger-Mpumalanga International Airport. We have now reopened Skukuza. It's fully operational. Flights actually started running from the 2nd of June. There is now a direct flight from Cape Town to Skukuza if you want, and from Johannesburg to Skukuza directly, and back as well. And we hope that that is going to help us with the volumes that we would like to have on programs. But in addition to this, we're also looking at a conference lodge, which is scheduled for opening in 2017. We have a world-class conference facility that we have recently established. But seeing that the occupancies are so high, accommodation is not available to service the conference facility, and so we have decided to establish the conference lodge, which will be linked to the conference facility. It's going to be a 125-bed lodge, which means it's about 250 people. And the EIA processes are already in progress as far as that is concerned, and we're hoping that brick and mortar should come into action quite soon. Then the Malolan Safari Lodge, that's work in progress. It's got different stages, but you know, initially we had plans to open that again in 2017. EIA processes are in progress. That's another over 125-bed facility. Next slide, please. And then, of course, in terms of the restaurant, we have received massive complaints regarding service levels within our restaurants, etc., in National Park, and as a result, we then decided we're going to use this model of branded restaurants. So at least we know we guarantee of the quality that we require in terms of food provision. If food is bad, it can spoil the rest of the holiday. That's what was so important for us to pay particular attention to that. And these are some of the new outlets that have been opened in the National Park. Next one, please. And then, of course, the last leg being connecting to society, and the different initiatives that we do. In the main is access. We believe that historically our people have had difficulty accessing national parks, to the extent that national parks are meaningless to some of them, but also the experiences of land dispossession and so on have made people very antagonistic to national parks. So it becomes a continuous effort that we have to put in to make sure that people can appreciate national parks as part of their heritage and they can access them as and when they please. Now, in order to promote that, we're giving access from time to time under different programs. And the SANPARKS program, the SANPARKS week program is growing very well. If you look at the performance last year, we got in 42,000 people in 1 week, as opposed to the 18,000 that we had targeted, which means that there is quite considerable growth in the efforts. And I believe that this year is going to be even better once the statistics have been finalized and so on. And then we also have got separate programs for learners and certain, you know, community groups like senior citizens, people with disabilities, etc., etc. Now learners alone account for the 215,000 that have had access to national parks under those different programs, kids in parks, in Beu, Kruger to Kruger, one of them which is very specific to Kruger, and we've got a junior honorary ranger program as well, just to make sure that kids can start from a very young age to relate to national parks. Next one, please. Contribution to jobs, as Minister has said, in total we employ about 10,000 people in all national parks. The one thing that we realize that we will have to pay attention to going forward is to really quantify the total impact of our contribution, because here we're counting the jobs that we can see within our own establishment and those of our business partners. But if you look at all the towns bordering national parks, you find in fact that some of those towns would not have existed had it not been for the national park that is there now. And to account for all of those impacts, we'll need to do a little bit more of it. Next one, please. And this is part of our SMMG development as part of the EPWP programs. Next one, please. And then we also got the legacy, what we call the legacy projects. We took a decision a while ago to set aside 1% of our tourism revenue so that it can be allocated to in support of local community projects. And we now currently are focusing on education-related projects, computer laboratories, and school administration blocks, etc., are the things that we still, you know, are paying attention to. Of course, the program is still at its infancy. We do hope that this can grow into a high impact contribution to local communities. Next one, please. And then, of course, lastly, the challenges. The committee and minister have all referred to the issue of rhino poaching, particularly in Kruger. It remains a challenge for us, mainly because of the complex nature of the problem. When this problem started, we had rangers that were trained to do conservation work. And suddenly you had to change those people into decent anti-poaching units, which is more paramilitary-orientated. And for some of them, it's been very, very difficult. So essentially, the impact of this is the high cost of maintaining the rhino populations that we have. But of course, we just mentioned this. You know that there are various initiatives that we are undertaking. It's the new management strategy that the minister has announced the other day, and we are hoping that all of that combined will get us somewhere. Indeed,
from what we can see, and there is some hope that maybe the scale of the problem could be reduced. Of course, we are aware that there are other species out, you know, other than rhino, that are also under threat, and we are preparing to make sure that whatever we do for the rhino now will be suitable for when elephant poaching takes its toll as well. And then, of course, I've spoken about the expanded socio-economic beneficiation. And here, so we on the lookout for high-impact beneficiation projects that can make a real difference in people's lives, especially those that are in the rural areas. Gone are the days when we used to provide firewood and tax rice alone. We think now it's time for us to really look at high impact issues. Of course, the black visitors, that continues to be a challenge, but we are working very, very hard. There are various initiatives that we are now undertaking. Lastly, is visitor safety. As much as we are more concerned about poachers coming into parks now, we are equally concerned about the possibility of other crime arising out of the poaching crime. We already know how safety issues have become important for a park like Table Mountain, for example. So it continues to remain a concern for us. We know in Kruger we've got rhino issues, but who says one day that's not going to change to another crime which is committed against our own guests. So we remain very vigilant towards it. So I hope this has brought us to the end. If there's no next slide. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Excellency. That is the presentation, and I'm told the time is now at 10:30. Can we have a discussion on the presentation? And I hope that you don't go to 11:30. Let's just have a 30-minute discussion. If there are any other issues, we will see. We are still going there, by the way.
Thanks very much. It was quite informative, the presentation. Okay, I would like to ask you, before I jump down, are we going to base our question on the presentation? I think it's, are we only limited to it? Or are we going to bring other subjects which are on the...
You are a member of parliament. Bring any question. But what we're trying to avoid is come with questions that basically are of an overarching nature. Because I thought that here we're getting to know what they do. They will still come before us, by the way, on their annual report for last year. What the Auditor General found in that report. So we didn't want that we conflate those issues with this get to meet and know one another. But members have every opportunity to ask any question in this world.
With your advice, with your seasoned politician guidance, I will not ask the question for now. But I think in addressing the challenges of lake visitors, other than doing this environment education to schools, I think we must also put together outreach for schools in order to sort of like encourage them to come and visit to this parks and be able to get themselves familiar with the surroundings of the parks. That at the end of the day would also encourage them and the others to go and visit these parks. I think that's what I would now say.
Thank you. Honourable Member Mandela.
Thank you, Chair. I'll focus on the challenges since we are on the fever of rhino poaching. So I want to check here, having this challenge of rhino poaching, do you have plans in overcoming this challenge? Do you have plans maybe in dealing with your, like many people say, some people in the past are the ones who give information. do you have plans in dealing with this challenge inside the park, and also plans in motivating your staff to accept the salary that they get? Do you have such plans to deal with these challenges inside before you can look outside how the syndicates are coming inside? That's what I want to check, and also to check in terms of this challenge, how many of your staff people did you lose in terms of being killed by the syndicate, or maybe in terms of getting them being involved in this thing? How did you do? Maybe did you fire somebody? How did you lose some of them in terms of this poaching and the plans on addressing all the challenges? Thank you, Chair.
I'll come back to Babu Hatter. Babu Mandi.
No, thanks. That's just one question around the visitor states. Reported that there are about 5 million visitors out there, which is an impressive number of people mentioned. I mean, who visited. The minister also tried to explain why the countries are not coming and to visit our country. But I've just read the Lonely Planet. South Africa is regarded as one of the best destinations for wildlife. Now, in the countries that you have mentioned, not a single BRICS country is part and parcel, and South Africa is in the mix with BRICS, which then means that we are underperforming in that regard, because we just single one BRICS country, China, massive population. So how does one part envisage to tap this market? Let's take East Africa. Let's decide. East Africa, Nigeria, leading Africa in terms of the economy, and many other countries in Africa, oil and gas, economies are growing.
They're leading Africa in terms of the economy, debatable.
Okay, I want to check, are there plans by SAPAC to tap on this market? Because it is known that tourism really contributes towards the economy, towards growth, towards employment. That would be my question, the potential that is there. That's all there.
Babu Harem.
Thank you, Chair. I would request on the next meeting when we deal with the triple R, that we'll be given a full report of all the funds that we have received by Tim Ryan's case and how they were dispensed. I'll request it on the next meeting. Thank you, Chair.
I'll shoot for the question now, come on. All the funds that have been raised by the various NGOs and... Oh, okay. Okay. Any input, any intervention, same come? Before we hand over to the department.
Can I just get clarity? Sustainable youth is a term that is being used a lot at the moment. Exactly how does NPOP within the department define sustainable youth? What in your opinion constitutes sustainable youth? And when can we expect the finalization of the CEO's case, as well as the manager who's present here on suspension? Thank you very much.
We'll just respond to yeah. Of course, there is no case of the CEO. We just need to appoint a CEO. There is no what you might call a personal case. No. There is a case of a suspended manager, not a CEO. Okay. Let's... In these business transactions that we see, how do they live and complement our conservation mandate? from your presentation, we see Abu Mbeki, we see a link and the whatnot, there is quite a nice business model. Indeed, it might come in handy and it might be complementary to the core functions that we are going to do as a department. How do they add value to our community so that we don't end up being a business entity and forget about the core mandate that was supposed to present. The board is now in your court. I don't know whether you want to start, Minister.
Oh. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Maybe I should. Just, and also allow other colleagues to respond to some of the questions. I'll start with this issue of the CEO. As you rightly said, we don't have a case on the CEO that's contesting any what could it ever be, suspension or termination of it, end of a contract, an end of a contract. It's not possible to contest an end of a contract. When the contract ends, we continue to appoint. However, the CEO has raised an issue, I think, about the manner in which the exit package was dealt with. It's got nothing to do with us feeling a latency. So that matter is being dealt with at the CMA. It's out of our sight, actually, in as far as a position of the CEO is concerned. Because what we are doing rightfully, we have advertised, we are in a process of a very advanced stage of getting a cabinet decision on the matter of CEO. The suspended manager, you rightfully, there's not been a question around it. I think we have reached to the committee that case is to be had. They have been charges, I think, late, and that case we're just awaiting the outcome, as if we are not able to discuss the merits and demerits and the contents of that case. The issue about fund pass defining this concept of sustainable use within its context, to start with that by being Zanta. You see, we have a nature reserve, the conservation area in Zanta. Earlier on, the CEO, acting CEO, indicated something that in the previous law and previous arrangement, there was a notion built in there that parks like these ones are just to be ambient places, not to be visited, not to, you know, just to, not for enjoyment of people, but just to see an area that isn't there. It used to be like that. But now we utilize those parks in a sustainable manner for purposes of economic activity in our space. And part of the economic activity is to use the conservation space to have these activities that you refer to, Chair, or the Wimpies and also on, they are not part of our business, but to get tourism and tourists treated in a manner that's befitting, we use those parts. So it is a way of sustainable utilization in a way. Sustainable utilization is not just about shooting animals. It's about using that space in a sustainable manner for people's, the purpose consumptive and non-consumptive uses are being reminded. Mm-hmm. But that's all, those are actually sustainable utilization. So that's within the context of the park. When I was saying that it's about shooting animals, even shooting animals would be hunting in a legal manner that is intended to actually utilize those hunting in a sustainable manner. Obviously, there won't be short shooting of everything. It's legally, it's counted how many animals they hunt per year. It's not happening in parks, in front parks, under our national parks. These are just for non-consumptive uses, which is part of the sustainable utilization of natural resources. I think those who would be speaking to brief issue may add, but what I really wanted to say is that there have been trends in the past. The trends are continuing, and what we are doing, together with the Department of Tourism and its entity of marketing, and as well as the Brand South Africa, is to turn around the trends that have been there. There's been particular communities that are nature lovers by origin. You see even from those, and of course the visitors of China are not necessarily in the past. Not in Sapas or Santas per se, but if you look at provinces like Northwest Province, you would find a lot of people from that nationality who visit those areas. May not quite be accounted for here, but the trend I'm talking about is that you would find in the nature space like this one, there's been certain communities that have been visiting throughout and been a practice in their families for many, 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 many years. Whereas you find people like those who are, let's take part of BRICS, which is Brazil. Brazil are nature lovers, but in a different manner. They tour their own country. They much more in their own space, and they are beach lovers, they are partying, they are whatever. Not quite in this space. And it's naturally like this. So that's part of the trend that we want to turn around and actually get them to come to the natural spaces like this. Of course, they do have lots of natural spaces. They do day visits in their own country. But here for day visits, I don't think it will be as easy as order for them. The same applies to Indian community. We know probably the same to Russians as well. So this is really just a trend issue that we are trying to turn around and get an increase from those countries. And certainly South Africa, the tourism department has presence in those other areas as well. I think the just issue, last one that I want to deal with, the Honourable Chair, has been a question that we were asked about the funds that we have received, that has been received for rhino poaching assistance. We have responded to that question. If you look at it, I think it is already in your, has been responded to. What we're not able to do is to account for funds that are with NGOs. It's not possible. I don't know how we'll do that. It's like asking us how many, you know, it's people who have been given funds in their own space. However, it doesn't mean that we don't have concern. And our concern was shown by the fact that we actually started collating information, asking the NGOs who are in the space of a rhino, who are receiving funds in the name of rhino, to register, so that we know that they have registered. To date, those who have registered are about, we gave a number in that answer, and then we have raised about 101 million rand, just over 101 million rand. That's what we said also in that response. Those are the only ones who have registered, but we know it's a small fraction. We don't have mechanism and a tool to call those who have not registered to come up with that, but it is equally a concern, because we don't need to have economy of an environment increasing in our space, and we don't quite. We just wish that there was a mechanism and a tool to just be able to say, don't refuse to give information. But others have indeed given that information. Ours we have also given it as two companies, the lotteries of the Dutch lotteries. We've given the amount that they've donated. It's a foundation. They've also they've contributed. Promised about 250 or so million rand, it's distributed already given 52 million rand of that. 254 and 154, 150 million rand. No, this is a Dutch lottery.
Yes,
I'm talking about the Howard Foundation. It's 250, just over 254 million rand. They've contributed practically 52 million rand already. Yesterday we had to receive a donation that's over and above part of this money for the Howard Foundation. Monday, they bought a shop, an expert who they are running as a contributor, together with a Eurocopter, you talk about the name properly, give the name. But we had to receive that as part of this contribution. Unfortunately, they were not available to do the actual ritual. Yeah, it will also be added as part of already money that was in hand so far. We're not able also to say how much has been used from the lottery funds, because that part, we have actually accounted for it indeed, but that's what information that we get from the people who are dispersing these funds, and these are Peace Park Foundation. because we received that money, but we handed it over after the arrangement and agreement to the T-Star Foundation. And we've also stated what they were doing with that money. Thank you.
Chair, can I say, thank you, Minister and honourable members, just to reinforce the earlier question on, if I may just follow up on the issue of sustainable use, the NIMA Biodiversity Act outlines the policy position around sustainable use as a policy of South Africa. For example, there are other aspects that lead to use of genetic GMOs, genetically modified organisms in the continent, in Africa and in some other countries. Other countries with different policies than South Africa. We opted for a policy that allows us to produce food in agriculture, particularly that is genetically modified, considering that we know that naturally some of the medicines, the reason why you go and use a lab process, you know that there is that element. If you can be able to take an aloe element and produce it technically in a pharmaceutical environment, you would be able to multiply and provide that for your nation. In South Africa, there is a position that says we then subscribe to the utilization of genetically modified organisms. However, we know that there are risks to the environment, and there are also risks to the humans, which is why we then have a stringent process through agricultural regulation, but also in terms of the biodiversity regulations. We then have to run a process of a risk assessment, and those would have to be tested over time before they then qualify to be utilized in the country, including some of the natural vegetation. And now it's bringing more and more. So there is a lot that we can talk about more in biodiversity. When the biodiversity branch presents, we can then get into the uses. Most of our use activities, whether it's in wildlife, whether it's in plants, and whether it's in marine species, because again, we have species that are traded under the international trade, which is CITES. And all of those, there is a whole scientific process that precedes that trade. And once you have satisfied those requirements on non-judgmental findings and so on, there is a debate at CITES. And then you would then have that, if it's already listed, or you lower the listing, or at times you want to up the listing so that those endangered species are then conserved and not allowed trade on them. So that is basically, and in South Africa we've opted for some certain stringent systems in national parks. National parks hunting is not allowed by that regulatory arrangement currently. It does not mean that if you decide one day you want to do it, it's not considered, it's coherent to the policy, but in South African national parks, there is no hunting that is allowed. Hunting or legal hunting or what I call controlled legal hunting is allowed in provincial parks and some of the nature reserves, but mostly it's provinces that then give those. We in national parks we sell those animals. We don't allow you to hunt inside the property. And then was coming back to the question on tourism and marketing. Sandparks and even our other agencies, Sandy, their products are products that are part of the overall marketing strategy of the country. As the minister was saying, the Department of Tourism has got a national tourism strategy, which links to both transport in terms of airlift, as well as also aligned with the conservation needs in this respect. But there is still aspects of the marketing that SANParks undertakes. And those markets are prioritized markets, and the minister was already saying that in some areas already they are office, the focus of the tourism office, but also the Department of International Relations provide that service.
If I may just say, ministers and honorable members, China, when we used to run the function of tourism, just my recollection from that, we have a lot of visitors from China. However, their spend has always been very low. How much they spend in the country, because there is a definition of tourism, how they arrive at what are the priority markets. They look at how they spend and also the kind of frequencies that you get from those countries. And they do these studies from time to time and reconfirm. So China is a priority market. Yes. However, remember that tourism happens through to operators. They tended in the study that we did at time, they tended to use their tour operators, their money is spent in China, they arrive here and they use their buses or whatever. So even the channel that they use not to really give you real spend in South Africa. Whether that situation has changed, I think the Department of Tourism can confirm that for us. So those are the dynamics around where do you put money for marketing, right? And what value do you get out of that investment? And I think the strategy of SEMPAC therefore is based on that research and understanding.
Thank you, Chair. I think there is only one outstanding issue that I can deal with, and that has to do with the internal issues relating to rhino poaching. And we're dealing with those areas and when they come. I think we would be naive to think that the system is clean, not when so much money is involved in the illegal trade in rhino horn. So indeed, we do agree that some of our people have been caught being involved in poaching. But all of those matters have been dealt with. Even before they went through disciplinary hearings, they first were sent to jail. And they were served with disciplinary charges right in their cells. That's how radical we have become as far as this issue is concerned. We have revised the conditions of service because originally we did not have integrity testing as part of the conditions of service for rangers. And now we have brought it in. There is random integrity testing. But also, as and when we suspect things have somehow gone wrong, we subject people to the testing and we can conclude immediately on action to take care. So I'm comfortable we are on top of that. The risk does remain because of the amount of money that are involved, of course, in the trade. I did not respond to the part where our staff may have been killed. Fortunately, we haven't lost any staff members of late. The only mortalities we have suffered were five officials from the National Defense Force who had a mechanical problem with the helicopter which then crashed. That was a highly publicized issue. And then we also lost one Defense Force officer and one ranger in what was concluded to be friendly fire. But that was right at the beginning when the integration was taking place. Of late, for the last 3 years or so, we haven't had any fatalities on our side. Thank you.
Yes, Minister.
If I may add, we have also been asked this question as a parliamentary question about the number of staff members lost. It's just that one we indicated. We did have a casualty of somebody who was shot, operated by Sinfield and in hospital for quite a while. That's why we didn't add that different onto the list. The staffing issue, I think fundamental to this question, if you, as I understood it, was the issue about how do we remunerate our staff for them not to be tempted and to fall prey. there has been a great improvement in the salary packages of our staff. There was a time where we experienced some labor challenges about 3 years or so ago, 4 years ago. And since then there's been, you know, the restructuring of the package. It's not only looking at the restructuring of the package, but how we actually also ensure that we treat them. Currently we are upgrading, in the process of waiting to upgrade the facilities where they live, so that it's actually habitable, especially those new ones who have just been trained through facility that this International Training Institute where we're training them. So there is really that attempt on an ongoing basis to make their packages inclusive. The children are also taken care of, you know, families and so on, those who are actually residing in the park itself. But as a CEO was saying, that doesn't quite just indicate that or give us a full confidence that indeed nothing will come in between. And this is as a result, we are continuing to do the vetting of all those staff members so that we know who could be vulnerable and so on in a continuous basis. So the board is continuously doing this exercise as well. Mm-hmm. And there was a question about packages to schools, as I'm certified. I think we may talk about it, but from the department side, there is a program called Fundisa, which I think we all could Fundisa for Change, which could be very well articulated. I don't think I should just monopolize the stage.
Is the part Fundisa for Change, you want to speak, come from? And there's Fundisa for Change, CEO.
On different parts, there's a partnership program which is currently in place between the department, working with the Department of Education, South African National Parks, and the main sponsor of the program, which is D-Campaign, which has now been running for 10 years. And it has done a lot in terms of exposing kids from previously disadvantaged backgrounds into the park environment. Okay. And we're also trying to integrate that with the school curriculum. Sand Parks is primarily, for now, the main implementing authority, but in terms of our discussions, we are also intending to expand this program to provincial parks as well.
Yes, so.
Thank you, Chair and members. Fundisa for Change is indeed a very exciting project that we are involved in. We have partnered with the Department of Basic Education, as well as Green Matter, which is also a partnership of various environmental education organizations, to develop a system that is not only providing reading material, curriculum support, lesson plans, etc., but specifically focusing on training teachers to teach environmental matters in a matter that is supported through a network with open text. It's computer-based, but it also has lesson plans already developed. We are, through this network, constantly loading additional information onto the system, and part of that is both biodiversity management in terms of species management, but also conservation management in general, and in terms of the economic and ecological processes associated with the conservation process. The focus is currently, as I said, with the Department of Basic Education, which is built into the curriculum at the primary school level. So we are now in the process of developing the secondary phase, and thereafter it will also go into the tertiary phase. We have started negotiations with the Department of Further Education in order to get some standardized curriculum planning around environmental management, which is not currently the case, and there is different curricula applied in different areas. So currently the focus is really in getting teachers to understand it, to have access to material, and to engage with the opportunity. Some of the materials have been included is linked very directly with the Kitten Park, to also link it with an educational tour type of approach to make it practical, because most schools do take kids on educational trips, and we want that to link back to the curriculum that we reach the principles of environmental management.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. The last principle that I thought I forgot when I was
adding to the minister on the sustainable use is the principle that what the proceeds that we get from those various activities are invested in conservation. So, for instance, there was a time where we had the ivory from the earth, just in case honorable members. So that ivory was, we had applied to scientists for a fame with Botswana, Zimbabwe, and Zambia. And part of the conditions, because the motivation was that there are countries that were not in favor of South Africa, or at least those other countries being involved in that thing. But in the end, with all the scientific work that was provided to then substantiate that proposal, agreed to that one of sale. And that one of sale for South Africa, those funds are still being invested in the conservation of the elephant and the environment that we find our wildlife in together with the elephants. So in most instances, that's what we do. I'm not going to talk for other countries again. I'm just saying in South Africa, we could have used that for other reasons, or Treasury could want us to then put that money back into the fiscus to fund other, but we have an opportunity that mostly through the public entity, we are able to then define what that is going to be done with for in terms of funding conservation, which is public good, because in most instances, our conservation work is much well funded, as you may appreciate. So it is also helping to balance that.
Could you want to add? Not to cover, just to assist honorable members around also on the sustainable use. If you read about the Act, there are four chapters that are talking to sustainable use. There's a chapter on bioprospecting. There's a chapter on certain or threatened species. There's a chapter on ecosystems and a chapter on alien invasive species. They talk to use issues. Supporting that, there are regulations for each of those chapters to say how do you regulate that species. Thank you.
Let us have to tell all of us that as countries, at times our sovereignty is being threatened by other countries, that we should know. It should come naturally to all of us. That how we do things, other countries might not agree with us for whatever political and economic reasons. Because they might not even have the thing that we have that we want to use for sustainable use. And therefore they might even, we know of meetings where those who are powerful are called presidents and not our president to come to their meetings where those presidents are being dissuaded from this notion of sustainable use. Now just imagine one country somewhere calling presidents of other countries. You know, that's the politics of the West. They are very strange. But having said that, I think it would be very good that we all familiarize ourselves about our policy position on this matter. That would be quite helpful. Now, where is Isimangali zone? At least we are still around 11 o'clock. You have... do we have the time for tea? Okay, colleagues, we see some of us are reporting to some people here. Now we are told that why don't we grab tea just for 5 minutes, then come back, because we seem to be having time in our hands. Let us grab tea outside, then come back, we can drink and eat while we continue with our work. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is this called a biological break?
Oh, yeah.
Scusa, how is the Philippine tea doing? No, heritage size. They are trying to get hold of her.
She had requested to travel and I think she has been running around with the management authorities, although they are complaining about the short notice. But I think there's three. I think there's three that come forward to confirm that they are in the SOD. I can't remember that the other
name. If you please, You mean all the heritage sites? No.
It's from trading freely on the stock exchange. Because you never know who puts you down,
Thank you.
And the school, you know, we're saying, why can't you claim us so that we go there and you've been late?
Thank you, colleagues. Thank you for coming back. You can have your tea whilst we are working. Because you see, Parliament at 2, there is a sitting. And all of us who are members of that Parliament, including the Minister, we must be there. Thank you, colleagues. We have just gone through some parts. We will now hand over to yourselves, Minister and the DG, to lay the foundation for the presentation on Isimangaliso. The platform is yours.
Thank you, Chair. Once again, Honourable Chair and members, Honourable members, we just in a few words to indicate. I said this is actually one of our most important wetlands areas, international conventions related to one of the conventions that are stated in here, which is what the Heritage, World Heritage Convention. World Heritage Convention is listed according to that. This is really, the listing happens after South Africa would have identified the, what he called the universal, outstanding universal value, what he called OUV, OUV of a particular place in the country, and then submit for listing. We had, and before you actually are agreed to be this kind of site, there's a whole lot of visiting, coming, inspections, and motivations that we do to get a place to the status. So this is one vote, and I think historically it will be indicated, which I suggest that if that the members of Steve or whoever actually will be talking, just talk to those issues about the very beginning and before Peter and the now Peter, so that we can get a gist of what it actually used to be like and what else is being done there. Quite a good work happening there. Unfortunately, if I may just raise ahead of time some of the political questions that may have emerged, and maybe not so succinct in the presentation, is that land users around that area were not quite what any value out of the land use, particularly in that area. And there was this is adjacent to a forestry place called Dukuduku forest in that area. And therefore, that has not quite been very, very, you know, historically there are occurrences that resulted in communities not quite benefiting from that. So there has been quite a whole lot of redressing that's been happening in the area. Whilst we were developing this world site, condition site, world heritage site, to the magnitude where he is as son, as Ismangaliso. We also at the same time had particular tasks allocated to the province as well as national departments like housing, water affairs and so on to do work around development of that the places that are not quite fenced in, which is just a neighboring community. Why is it important? Because a similar thing that we've been discussing in the other parts about rhino and communities living next to the rhino could actually happen, cutting of the fence, opening and moving in on a daily basis and so on. So the redress needed to happen simultaneously, starting with housing, settlements and so on. And I was serious, and I saw the premier this past weekending over some of the houses there. I'm not sure if it's the bill for everybody else, but it's important just to keep the two linked. Last thing, point that I want to make is that as Kalashisa, we're very proud because wherever you go, this is actually one of the best examples of the world of the outstanding universal value places that have been declared to be World Heritage Sites that are actually being utilized in a sustainable manner. We appeared in the 38th meeting of the World Heritage Sites Committee recently, which was sitting in Qatar, and that notion was also, and the statement was also made. To accept and recognize the fact that Ismangaliso is one of those that are really doing very well. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair, having said that. Yeah.
Hi, I think
all right, I think there's a few more votes from the CE, the SPCO is going to fix to make the presentation. I think the minister is raising more the issues around also the state of land change because a major part of the park there were land claims that were settled successfully. There are still a few outstanding land claims,
yes.
And I think we can also in the presentation give an update in that regard. But a core management framework arrangement is actually it was piloted there and it's been still being perfected in its implementation. So I'd like to hand over to Chair, okay.
Thank you, Chair, Minister, members of the Portfolio Committee. I would suggest, in terms of how we've arranged this is available to you, that we deal with this in the presentation because it's part.
Thank you.
Honorable
Chair, Minister, first I'd like to tend to the apologies of our CEO, who is in fact in Cambridge attend a sustainable youth workshop. I think we've gone backtrack a little bit to our origins and our roots because I think to understand the child one must understand the parent. Ismangaliso started or has its roots in the Zibombo API, which was set up in the mid-90s under the Forbes and Nelson Mandela government to address the issue of poverty and misplenty in the sort of northeast KZN region. It included southeast Swaziland and the southern section of Mozambique. And the idea there was to look at the comparative advantages of the era and try to address platforms for economic development. What essentially it did was look at the big roads and the big levers to unblock blockages to development. So there was a big upgrade to the spine road, which is the first serious investment that the area received since the 1980. You can see the entire section red has been upgraded except for the little dotted parts which still remain in progress. The upgrade of the N2 was completed. Border posts were improved and reopened. The Lubombo TSCA, a series of protocols were signed between the three countries that addressed issues such as access, health, and a number of things like that. That top section in the green there is something that we're working on with Mozambique at the moment, and that is the potential and probable listing of the World Heritage Site in Mozambique, which will then create the first trans-border marine protocol. Marine World Heritage Site of the world. And so we're supporting Mozambique in that effort. This is the profile of malaria. When we first started out working on the Lubombo SDI, 9 in 10 children on the border between South Africa and Mozambique got malaria. What's happened now is malaria has reduced or dropped by 88% in Mozambique, 96% in Swaziland, and 98% in South Africa, so that's malaria incidents. So these are the big platforms, the big initiatives to try to unblock the economic barriers. On the back of this, we created what's called the Lubombo Route, which was adopted by province eventually, and it's become the E3 Route. This is what road infrastructure looked like when we came along. This is what it looks like now. And this is not just a means to an end. You can see children are benefiting from it, the economy is benefiting from it. People who were previously having to replace vehicles every 2 or 3 years now have a sort of 5 or 6 year longevity in their vehicles. It means serious things to small business. Following that, we listed Isimangaliso as a World Heritage Site in 1999. On the back of, there were 3 criteria, ecological criteria and 1 cultural one. It was listed for its unique ecological and biological processes. It was listed for its biological diversity. This is a picture of Coelacan. Not sure that you're all aware, but this first discovered, thought extinct, first discovered Sidwana Bay in 2000. And for superlative natural phenomena. What this really means is that 176 countries decided that Isimangaliso was a one-off. Everybody has to agree. Okay. And I remember the example that was set at UNESCO. I remember Andrew said at UNESCO, somebody stood up and said, you know, it's something for me to say my wife is beautiful. For 176 countries to say my wife is beautiful, that's quite something. Okay. And unlike other World Heritage Sites, Isimangaliso truly is a one-off. There is no other place in the world that is like Isimangaliso. Our vision and mission comes from our mandate. Our mandate is set in the World Heritage Convention Act. It is to conserve and prevent the world heritage values. It is to deliver benefits to communities living in and adjacent to the park and to facilitate tourism development. So the big thing that distinguishes us from many traditional conservation areas is that we are and we believe ourselves to be a development agency. What we've done since inception is on the back of the major tourism routes, the N2 and the what we call the Lubombo Road, we have built a surface of roads to facilitate tourism through and into the park. We have built a number of roads in the park to facilitate tourism access and circuits. We have consolidated and brought in new land in the park to expand the land mass. So the dark green area that you see at the bottom there was not part of the park. The park was a very narrow blue-green screen sliver. Much of that is consolidated land with forestry. So we've done some land consolidations. The yellow area is still an area that we're working on. We have fenced 450 kilometers of park. That's traveling to Durban and back. From Tunisia.
Okay, so return from computer. Okay. It's a 5-hour drive. Okay, we have sent off a Beni section of the park. It's the first time since the 1800s that that section of the park has been successfully fenced. First time in conservation history. And the big dream is for game to migrate from the top of Lubombo Mountain down to St. Lisa as it once did. That's really the big ecological dream. And very soon we hope to be able to achieve that. We've brought in almost all game that existed in this park. The last species to bring in is eland, and we're in the process of procuring eland this year. So we brought in lion, we brought in wild dog, we brought in cheetah, we brought in giraffe. This is the last species that we're looking to bring in. We revamped a lot of conservation infrastructure. When we came in, there was much that is in disrepair. And we have had a big infrastructure program to look at public access infrastructure, jetty hides, picnic sites, tourism road, and we are two-thirds of the way down the road with that. And our next focus, and I'll show you in future slides, is to look at tourism development. We spend a lot of our capex on labor and on small and medium enterprise in the area in line with our policy that we're there to create community benefits. So this is the infrastructure map that I alluded to earlier, and we're two-thirds down the way. Most of the infrastructure in the southern section of the park is created. What you see here is two-thirds of the park. The top third is not on the map, and it goes all the way to the Mozambique border. We are responsible for 9% of South Africa's coastline. That's important to this part. It's 200 kilometers in length, 332,000 hectares in size. These are just some pictures from some of our programs, land rehabilitation, infrastructure construction. We have a very big environmental education program. We have a school awards program. We visit schools in the area every year. There's a big competition that schools participate in. We host at least 195 schools. We have a bursary program. We have 47 children in university at the moment. We've had our first 10 graduates. And we have an equitable access program. So we have a number of communities that we host free in the park every year. And this is what, this is Christmas Day at Sidwana. We have certain nodes in the park that are open days, and people just come and visit for free. The DG spoke earlier about land claims and co-management agreements. Notwithstanding the fact that certain land claims have not been finalized, in other words, the Section 42D agreements have not been signed with the Department of Land form, we have gone ahead and concluded co-management agreements, which means we have frameworks in place where we engage land claimants, and we've got beneficiary packages. Each year, one of the benefits is the payment of revenue. We have a revenue sharing arrangement, and we pay revenue to claimants. This year's package was a total of 860,000 rand that we shared across the different claimants. This is a presentation of ceremony with one of the claimant groups. We have a tourism skills development program. All our groups, all our tour guides at least, reach the highest NQF level. 80% of the tour guides that we put through this program are employed. In fact, we employ a lot of freelance guides, and they're in short supply at the moment because they have full-time jobs with lodges and other facilities around the park. We run, although it's not our core mandate, we do run security programs outside the park. One of these is a vegetable garden program. We do often because if we don't run programs like this outside the park, we get pressure inside the park on natural resource harvesting. So to take some of the pressure off natural resource use in the park, we run programs outside the park to support people. We run art and craft programs. Some of our craft programs actually supply into retail stores. One of our art programs has displays at the Moses Mabhida Stadium. Our artists have sold to corporates. There's been artists who have sold persons for 100,000 rand a piece through this program.
And we also hold special stakeholder events around the park. So that was an event we had with Shembe people. And we do that sort of throughout the year. And this is one of our land rehabilitation programs. One of the big things we did was remove commercial forests. When we came along, there were about 14,000 hectares of plantations in the park, and it was a big initiative to move the plantations out and restore the wetlands that had effectively dried up because of incompatible land uses.
Well,
literally, yeah. Because every alien tree uses 25 times more water than an indigenous one. So that coupled with natural phenomena like drought and so on had literally dried up in a lot of the areas. And here you can see some of our game reintroductions. What all of this has done, in effect, is it shifted tourism in the area significantly. We've seen in a period of 13 years an increase in tourism businesses in the area and an increase in the number of beds. Our latest research has shown that the southern section of the park contributes 15% of KZN's tourism. It's not an insignificant number. Tourism occupancies remain above the national average in the area. Our gate numbers have increased and held steady despite the global recession. We remain predominantly a domestic market destination. We have and support approximately 59 tourism businesses from around the area. A portion of those are community owned. And we're very proud that we have the only local community-owned fishing charter in the country that operates out of Sidwana Cay. Just in terms of our 2014 results, and I know there will be an in-depth briefing on that, we created 1,514 temporary jobs, 23 permanent jobs. We have an enterprise program. In the current year, we supported 82 SMEs, but we support 174 enterprises. And these are businesses that run everything from a spaza shop to a tourism business. We trained 1,133 people. We increased our park revenue. And most of our spending is e-spending. In terms of our structure, 14% of our operating expenditure is staff costs. The rest goes to the staff accounts. It goes into operations and it goes into economy development. It goes into local economic development. It goes into our programs. We're to this year and the next 4 years, really consolidating what we're doing.
I can see you forgot to talk about the mantra. I think you need to isolate this. Yeah, amongst those SMEs which are being supported, especially from community, a boat that's owned by the community that taken 12 out, which we delivered to them about, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah.
I wish I could show up here.
The Bangladeshi community have their own boat that does cruises. They also are busy at the moment developing their scare tourism lodge near Cape Bible. We're working with them on that project as well. So we're very active in that. In terms of our priorities and where we're headed in the next, in this year and the next financial years, on the park operations side, there's been a big focus on the Sidisia Lake hydrology. That's because of drought, that lake was closed for some time and there were issues with the salinity in the lake. We received a significant amount of money through the GEF Global Environment Facility channeled through the World Bank. to look at that, we are some way, the studies have been completed and we're now looking at the final solution on what will work as what will work ultimately at restoring the long-term hydrology of the system. The lake salinity levels have improved dramatically. There's one mouth now, and we're seeing the of biodiversity and ecology and systems health improving dramatically in Moshwa. Wetland rehabilitation is another big focus. Alien clearing remains a focus, and game restocking, I spoke to earlier. Eland is our big and final species introduction. On the local economic development front, the entrepreneurship program remains on our agenda. Small and medium enterprise contracting, we're going out again with our infrastructure program. We have another $360 million that we're looking to spend in the next 3 years. Higher education access program, we received the Mail and Guardian Award last year, or is it this year, I think, for the Mail and Guardian Greening Awards is this year. And we're looking to continue this program. We're looking for funding on this one. We continue with our environmental awareness program, and in fact we've commissioned our own bus now to be able to bring school groups to the park, and we're continuing with art and craft program. On the commercial front and tourism front, we thrust into tourism product development, and we're looking at specific programs with our community around the park, and looking at developing lodges owned specifically by communities. The Bangazi Cluster is the first one on the cards, and then we'll be working our way through the north. And we're looking at more public access type of products, so Charters Creek is the next lodge that we're looking at developing. We have an event program that we have started developing some time. We have a Fabricia Half Marathon. We have a mountain bike that takes place over mountain bike ride that takes place over 4 days across the park. We're introducing a paddle ski run. And part of that program is also community driven and aimed, so we bring children groups to participate in those programs and community groups to participate in those programs. There's also a big focus on surface level improvement, and we've just brought in a communication and marketing company to help us with a big drive on communication, marketing, and particularly social media. And we hope and always continue to take a big focus on corporate governance. We have a track record of unqualified opinions since inception, and we hope to be able to continue to maintain that into the future. And that's us. A young Mapuso and a young Virgo. I'm joking.
Thank you very much. Very quite impressive. Quite moving as well. And in fact, everybody, you know, when people are saying, just come to Ismail, I say for one. Now I can see for one. This is quite impressive. And it's for your taking. Unless there are additions that want to put Babu Mavos.
Thank you very much, Chair. It's all been covered, but I need to say that since it's a moment of aplomb to say, I don't know how to translate it. Was fleeing Shada, going towards Mislavialina, and he saw this wonderful place where Ishimanga lives. That's how the name Ishimanga came to be. Of this place. The subject to which I was asked to summarize has to do with land claims. 75% of the land claims in the area have been resolved. The three remaining ones are, as the Minister pointed out, the Dugu and the Gwatembe Coastal Forest and Reserve, and then the Western Shores. We signed 8 co-management agreements with the communities, and one community member is appointed by the minister to sit on our board. So regardless really of whether the claims are settled or not, we took the political decision was taken, I think it was correct, that they be represented on the board. Terry has indicated what benefits accrue directly to the community as a result of the association. 8% of the revenue, that's what it is, that's collected, which amounts to that 800,000 plus around the year, passes on to the community. Ismangariso, from a tourism perspective, and because of its ecological values and world heritage status requirements, does not keep too many establishments within the park. So there is a lot of benefits to the community where people build hotels, little lodges outside of the park, but the aim being to take people into the park. So there is regional beneficiation for the existence of the park. I think, in conclusion, we would say, we always say we, I mean, not important. All this is thanks to the very strong direct support that we've got from the minister and the department. You can hear the DG is very knowledgeable about these things. As if she managed some tasks like me. thank you. Thank you very much for that. The achievement really also, I can say that sitting on the board, that we've got good management on the ground. But the facilitation of the work comes really from government. Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues. Babukhatere Babmabila.
Thank you very much, sir. The presentation sounds very interesting. Until we go down on the grassroots and find out exactly what the horses are saying, I think we need to go down the shelf. But the presentation was fantastic. I would like to commend the department for the well job done. Thank you.
No, sir, only one thing is when a decade of key orders is quite a remarkable achievement. So basically, there is just to comment Sumangaliso for job well done. I wish I could have other things to raise, but I can't. Just practice. Thanks very much. I don't want to waste time. Thanks.
And maybe from my side, what we have started on community beneficiation is something that other parks can learn from. Because, you know, as we're moving around, the fortunate part is that in these public hearings we're with the minister. One issue that came up from time to time was that poverty that lives alongside our jewels. We have this jewel here that is a park, and the people coming in, and just outside that park, the poverty is unbearable. So indeed we might not change the entirety of those poverty levels, but indeed if all of us at least do something alongside what this man Lisa is doing, and also learn from this, and also do what we can to improve those who are worse off than ourselves, I think we can move a long way. That you have the community that has got something that ferries people into the area. You also have what, the fishing boat or whatever. Again, a community-owned one. These are things that are quite inspiring. Not to mention that outside of the park itself, you have people who have built businesses that are able to accommodate those people who come into the park. So again, it shows how, if we can sit down and drill down, what more we can do to support communities that are adjacent to the parks. So I'm just adding to what colleagues were saying, that you are doing a wonderful job, but of course we will come there. Our interest to come immediately is guaranteed. Is guaranteed. Unfortunately, we have got an appointment with Kruger. We have an appointment, and again, that appointment speaks to work that we have already done in relation to rhino poaching and related matters. Because many of these rhinos that are poached there at Kruger, so it's important that we go to Paco. We would like to go and see that beauty. You know, you see it in pictures. What more when you go there? You know, it will be so wonderful. Minister, I think members are appreciative of work that is being done. Your passing words?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think that this also has to introduce the other heritage sites, World Heritage Sites that we have in the country. Of course, your visit will be much appreciated, and we look forward to that. As you come, as in the deficit, until you see what's happening on the ground, you will see what's happening on the ground. You know, as far as it concerns the programs that we have been embarking upon. This doesn't mean that we have eradicated quite. We have gone a long way, and this is the reason why we said look at the before and the after picture. And certainly people who have benefited from this can say that. So we had some of the people who are in core management also present at the recent people and parts conference that says this past week. They are part and parcel of the ongoing discussions about what can be done further here at Isimangaliso and elsewhere. So work is ongoing. We do believe that the size limit, ownership of lodges and so on. I was listening this morning, somebody was saying in Tourism Month the discussion that it's difficult to, somewhat difficult for the previous leaders that is to run lodges. We don't believe so. It's about cooking, cleaning, taking care of visitors, which thing we do every day in our own homes. We're just structuring it in a form of business and do it once and for all. So we're really looking forward to yourself. And I think we haven't had a discussion about how we're going to be looking at the World Heritage Site. And I think that's taken with the Department of Arts and Culture as your sister portfolio committee that we have to work with in relation to this, I think. Thank you very much.
Thank you. In fact, it's good that you have also highlighted this, the broader question of World Heritage Sites, so that we also take interest in the others apart from this one. But of course, working together with our other colleagues in the other portfolio committees. But from where we are seated, I think you know, we come a long way as a country, by the way. And we know, it's only those who might not have read the history of this country that might not know what this question of dispossession did to the indigenous people of this country. It's only people who might be coming from much. It will therefore take a lot from all of us to correct this anomaly that visited our people. It will take a lot. To not take 20 years, definitely. But we should see measures that are meant to deal with those dispossessions of our people. So we are quite happy to see our government doing its bit. Of course, if our government doesn't hold, nobody wins. If our government doesn't take the lead in dealing with these questions that are very key to us having a prosperous country and a country united in its diversity. And that united in diversity should not include being diverse in poverty. So as long as we see signs and measures that our government is taking to deal with this phenomenon, we are ahead, as you have indicated now. But of course, we will still hold you by the hand to do more effort.
Yes,
because the issues are still there, very daring, looking at us to give leadership to those matters, all of us, so that we don't think that Minister Mulewa has all the answers to the difficulties that this government inherited. All of us should be working together to resolve these contradictions that we see. But having said that, we again, for you to leave your jobs and leave your wonderful St. Lucia and Mangalisa and come here to share with this committee, it shows that you respect the work that Parliament does. And we respect you for that. And we respect you for that. And we will always work together with you in ensuring that our protected areas are conserved properly. If we are going to stick to some, you know, 4 months ago, I didn't know what this is. But the environment activists, what is this? But this, we are getting there now. We are getting there. And we see the importance. We see the importance of conservation of our environment in all its dimensions. We can see that. But also your presentations assist us to even be more informed so that we hold you accountable. See, that's the problem for yourselves. That's the problem for yourselves. The more you keep us informed, the more you're in trouble. But you are in trouble so that all of us do better to conserve the environment. That's the only trouble you are in, is because our job is to assist you to do better in conserving our environment. And there is no any other notion that empower us as members of parliament. In fact, this constitution and that section 24 that empowers us, and all of us are in agreement on that part of the constitution, that we need to ensure that the environment is not harmful, not only to the people, but all the species that are found in our country. With these words, we will let... Yes, ma'am?
Chairperson, it sounds like you're wrapping up.
Yes,
I have four general questions for the department, but I was wondering if I can have an opportunity to ask.
Okay, I thought that I'd ask colleagues to indicate whether they would like to speak, but I didn't see your hand. But let's ask the questions.
Sorry, Chair, no, they're not specifically related to these presentations, and I've asked what is the best forum to ask certain questions, and it was indicated that in committee is appropriate. I'm just asking for your opportunities, Chair.
No, that would be correct, but my only problem is that if we are having these issues of discussions, then we bring in other questions that might not be related. We might be creating a precedent also for other members. My own take will be that in our, isn't it, we have got this possibility of asking questions from ministers. So in my view, that could be the platform that we use, that through these question sessions to the ministers and to the department, we then ask the questions that we like to ask. If they are not related to this, but no matter, my problem is that if I allow it, Mavira would then come with something else, some better than monitoring. Then Stian Gambo on something else very far from the issues that we are discussing now. And I don't think that in terms of conducting a meeting, that would be correct. But we do have the means of asking questions from the relevant authority. And that's what Parliament allows us to do. That's what advice I would give our members.
Thank you, Chair. Well, it is disappointing because I thought that committee would be an opportunity for us to interact with the department. But I have to accept what you say. But I hope that my disappointment will be recorded. Thank you.
Excuse me, Chair, can I come in? I don't want to belabor the point, but it will be important through your permission for it. Let me clarify so that there was no misunderstanding. I think this question was posed for time by the Honourable Harvey and the church and fight. That question, she will be speaking to them. So it was unfortunate that the member should want to make such remarks, because initially the chair did clarify the approach to this meeting when the Honourable Harvey asked the same question. Thanks, Chair.
But no, besides that, you know, I've had many meetings in my life, let's just have them. Just on the question of the subject matter before ourselves. Rest assured, if the member were to ask any questions relative to the issue that you have discussed here, I will not stand on your way, but rest assured. But if you yourself who said they have nothing to do with the matter that are before us. Now, from the chairing point of view, if I allow you today, then tomorrow I must allow everybody to raise any matter from any that might have no bearing on the subject matter being discussed. That is an ethical question. It's an ethical question on the person who's chairing, whether you allow a possibility where people can ask questions outside of the matters of discussion. And I think any meeting would agree with me that any questions should be at least be relevant to the matter that is being discussed. But as members of parliament, by the way, there is nothing that says we cannot ask questions from the relevant authority. Any question for that matter. Nothing. Nothing that says so. Minister.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Chair, and Honourable Members. The issue was discussed by just indicating that a question to be asked to the department would be welcome by all means. And it doesn't matter what question it is. But what I think is important to note at this point in time is that this body that's sitting here is an extension of what is called the National Assembly. It's a National Assembly committee sitting in this format governed by the rules of the National Assembly and the rules, therefore, of committees. Of course, committee is where members work and ask questions. But also within the same rules, Honourable Chair, the committee, amongst others, has got latitude to put for itself a program of work and an agenda for every meeting. My understanding is that for this meeting and for the program of work, which we have here, we've been looking at it, there are issues that are stated to be discussed into the future, and today it's Manganese and the Sun Pass. And therefore, going into the future, there are topics that have been selected to be discussed. I think nothing bars any honourable members raise a matter within the lines of the program as agreed to by your portfolio committee, as agreed to by your program, and therefore by on your agenda on a daily basis, as you meet here. And therefore, I think I'm emphasizing the fact that honourable member can feel in a portfolio committee raise the need for a particular topic to agreed upon as part of your program of work, as part of your agenda, and therefore that would then follow the sequence. Nothing is the thing. So I really think that we shouldn't at this point in time be understanding honourable member to be saying that according of the disappointment is around the agenda of today, is around the topic, is around, because I don't quite understand what it is around. On the agenda, certainly there isn't any topic that's called any other business. We have exhausted the two items of the agenda today. It can happen that in the next week, and remember, as such, let's put the topic on the table. There are our questions. As far as questions are concerned, we have just been saying that we have received questions, we have responded to their written questions, their oral questions for oral replies. Some of which are coming tomorrow. We'll be having the first time. You know, I think that we have prioritized with four questions at a time. There's been one. It just also shows how important the work that we're doing is really to the entire parliament. So yes, indeed, we are willing to respond, but in a manner that's prescribed.
Member Madam.
Thank you, Joe. We agree with the ruling, sir. If you can open it, you read. You do something that you tomorrow you can't manage it. I think the ruling is fine. There's no harm. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, colleagues. That brings us to the end of this meeting. And again, let's thank you and thank you and thank you very much. See you in Kruger National Park on the 25th and 26th. Please treat us right there. And by the way, as we come there, you see, we come as visitors. Don't expect us to have a supper. Please. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.